Hey there, welcome back to this fifth episode of Linguistics with Laura. Perhaps by now you've taken a little break from learning about language after that lengthy last episode on syntax, but today we're going to jump back into the world of linguistics and answer a question that has probably come up before in your day-to-day life, whether you realize it or not. That is the question of whether or not there is a correct way to speak a language. If you've been in a situation where you said something a certain way and someone corrected you purely on the basis of proper grammar, keep listening and make sure and share this episode with them for revenge. If, on the other hand, you consider yourself a grammar snob, you may be in for a rude awakening. But stay tuned, I will explain. And don't get offended, because I myself was once a pretty extreme grammar snob, and I was always silently correcting others in my head and using that as an artificial ego boost, which I know saying out loud makes me sound incredibly sad, and honestly, it kind of is. But anyway, let's really dive into this question today. There are countless examples of this issue in our everyday vernacular. For example, saying something like, "Me and Annika are going to the store," or this one, which really just grinds my gears when people criticize, "Can I go to the bathroom?" There's no way you've never run into an issue with one of these statements before, whether it was you getting, quote, corrected, or you doing the, quote, correcting. In the mind of someone who views themselves as a grammar snob, these sentences are the utterances of the layman, examples of improper English and an incorrect way to speak English. With this mindset, the sentence should be, "Annika and I went to the store," and "May I go to the bathroom?" Besides the fact that it's honestly just kind of obnoxious to pester someone to speak more properly, this idea has essentially no actual linguistic validity. By saying "me and Annika are going to the store," someone would know exactly what you meant and probably wouldn't think twice about the fact that you said "me" instead of "I." Similarly, if you were asked, "Can I go to the bathroom?" you would know exactly what this person was asking, and you wouldn't think twice about the grammar of the sentence. These are perfectly understandable ways of conveying the fact that you took a trip to the store with Annika and that you need to empty your bladder, respectively. Since these are perfectly understandable, they are considered completely valid and not incorrect. Linguists have deemed this notion that there is a correct way to speak something called language prescriptivism, the idea that there is a right and wrong way to speak a language, there is a rulebook or a code that has to be followed. The antithesis to this way of thinking is something called language descriptivism, or how language is actually used. Think about those memes you see on Facebook of, say, really cute Halloween cookies that your mom found on Pinterest. 9 times out of 10, the way they look on Pinterest versus how they actually turn out is quite different, and that's essentially what the difference is between language prescriptivists and language descriptivists. However, oftentimes those immaculate Thanksgiving turkey cookies that you see on Pinterest end up looking like the monster in a really bad horror movie, and that's not how linguists see language descriptivism, or the way that language is actually used. Linguists view the way we use language in real life, as opposed to this ideal standard of proper speech, as something beautiful and organic, unlike your mom's terrifying GMO-filled turkey cookies. Consider the difference between the words "less" and "fewer." According to a language prescriptivist, one shalt never use the quantifier "less" to describe a noun that can be counted, aka a count noun. So saying something like, "There are less weirdos in Target than Walmart, so let's make a Target run." This sentence would irk a grammar snob, but the thing is, any English speaker would know exactly what you meant by saying the sentence, and it wouldn't sound jarringly weird to them because, as English speakers, we have collectively used the word "less" to refer to nouns that can be counted, like books, chairs, fingers, etc., in addition to using the word "less" to describe mass nouns, or nouns that can't be counted, like water, anger, or education. However, if you were to say, "Oh, there's fewer water in that cooler," that would sound really weird, and I suppose it would make sense, but it would still sound really jarring, and any English speaker who heard it would probably stop and inquire about why you use the word "fewer" in that case rather than the word "less." The reason for this is because, as English speakers, we haven't established the word "fewer" to also relate to mass nouns. They only refer to count nouns. So yes, you could say that saying "there's fewer water in that cooler" is incorrect, but the fact is, I'm almost positive that no one would actually say that, because it's not a linguistic pattern that speakers of the English language have naturally adopted. In English, we often end sentences with prepositions, despite the fact that we're told not to. We're always saying things like, "Who do you get the muffins for?" or "What are you going to the store for?" etc. Upon hearing this sentence, most English speakers wouldn't even bat an eye, although there are many grammar snobs and language prescriptivists who would turn their nose up at a sentence like this. Here's the thing. There's no real or legitimate reason as to why this sentence is ungrammatical or incorrect. We know exactly what is meant by these questions, and it sounds natural to us for the most part, and because of this, it is a completely valid and acceptable way to communicate in English. Where this is different, however, is if you take a language like Spanish. You'll notice that I make a lot of comparisons between Spanish and English, and that's because Spanish is the only non-English language that I have a pretty firm grip on. So, in Spanish, you will never, ever hear someone end a sentence with a preposition. It just simply doesn't happen, whether in formal speech or vernacular. If you did hear someone say something like, "¿Dónde fuiste a?" or something along those lines, a Spanish speaker's ear would perk up at how weird and wrong this would sound. It just doesn't happen in the language like it does in English. It would be as weird as saying something like, "There's fewer gore in the first movie than the second," or something like, "That granola bar tasted very well." It just doesn't happen in the language, and no one would ever say it unless they're teaching you about language prescriptivism in a podcast about linguistics. There are numerous instances where groups of people have attempted to control the way people speak, especially in certain parts of the world. The prime example of this, especially according to linguists, is the French Academy, or in French, l'Académie Française. Believe it or not, there is actually a special committee in France that is composed of elite language officials who deem what is acceptable and what is unacceptable in the official French language. What we see in lots of languages is something called a borrowed word, so a word that is borrowed from a different language and integrated into the new language. The word doesn't get translated, but instead becomes one with both the vocabulary of the native language as well as the borrowing language. Think of some examples of these. Some of the best ones are taco, salsa, ukulele, safari. You can spend some time thinking of more, but we'll keep moving. In French, some of the most notable examples of words borrowed from English are le weekend, meaning obviously the end of the work week, and funny enough, le hot dog. As you can imagine, the Académie Française does not appreciate borrowing these words from English, so it actually came up with new terms for these words that they expected people to use. However, these artificial and inorganic terms had almost zero impact on French vernacular and everyday speech. While new terms may have imposed themselves into official written documents, the vast majority of French speakers still refer to the end of the week as le weekend and the delicious summer dinner food as le hot dog. French is the prime example of what I would call inorganic linguistic interference, and there's a specific reason why. Have you ever noticed how French is always viewed as a fancy and romantic language? Anytime you say anything in French, it always seems to sound exotic and elite, even if you're just saying the word for vomit, vomir. Because we as a world have internalized this idea that the French language is so fancy and high class, the French view their language as such, and thus try to preserve proper French language as much as possible. However, as you will see with any attempt to impose standards on a language that is naturally changing, as all languages do, it just doesn't work. Now, this doesn't mean that certain things aren't just wrong when it comes to orthography, which is the spelling of certain words. Spelling and writing is a bit more of an exact science than speaking, especially when it comes to conversational speech and everyday vernacular. So, for instance, confusing the two different types of your, the possessive your and the contraction of the words you and are into the word you apostrophe re. If you write a sentence that reads, "I hope you're having a great day," and you spell it your, that would pretty much be considered incorrect. You're confusing the homophones, or words that are pronounced the same way but have different meanings. The same goes for the words then and than, which I happen to pronounce just a little bit differently from one another, and also there, and you guessed it, there. These words are all used to mean different things and have different grammatical functions. That being said, a tried and true, somewhat radical language descriptivist might even say that because so many people have confused the two different types of your, especially shortening the contraction of you apostrophe re down to your, eventually the you apostrophe re could go away and the simple your could represent both types of the word your. But I would say that's a bit extreme, even for a language descriptivist. Now, I want to be clear. You can't just say whatever you want and have it be an acceptable way to communicate and use language. If that were the case, language would be meaningless and all of the symbols that we use to mean things would effectively mean nothing. If one day you just decided to refer to pillows as toothbrushes, people would be pretty confused as to why you were saying that you slept comfortably on your toothbrush last night. The key when it comes to figuring out if there's a correct way to speak a language comes down to how language as an essential part of the human experience functions on the most basic level. Language is fluid and organic, but also extremely arbitrary. All of the sounds we make, the letters and phonetic symbols that represent those sounds, they're all intrinsically meaningless and have no real-life relation to the words they represent, except for onomatopoeias. But we'll talk more about onomatopoeias in our episode on semantics. The fact is that sounds and words could easily have been something completely different, but they just happen to be what they are, and we have all accepted their meaning over the span of multiple centuries. Not only is language arbitrary, but it also changes, and a lot more often than you might realize. Take Old English. Well, yes, it was still technically English. It's essentially unrecognizable to the modern English speaker. Check out some excerpts from pieces of writing in Old English. A great example of this is Beowulf. I can just about guarantee that you'll have no idea what is being said, aside from recognizing a few words here and there. Now, don't get this confused with Shakespearean English, which, believe it or not, is actually considered, I believe, an early modern English. Old English, on the other hand, was spoken during the 5th to 11th centuries. But we'll get into the evolution of the English language in another episode. At the end of the day, if language wasn't supposed to change, we would still be speaking Old English instead of modern English, or perhaps we would still be using words like henceforth and crepulous. While you can't say that there is a correct way of speaking, that doesn't mean there are forms of speech that are considered more proper and professional than others. At a job interview, talking to your boss or teacher, meeting someone for the first time, etc. In other words, don't drop a bunch of F-bombs and say ain't a million times at your job interview or when you're meeting your girlfriend's parents for the first time. Learn that one the hard way. No, I'm just kidding. As I said before, writing is more of an exact science, whereas speech is much more fluid and changing. However, while journalists or lawyers may pay special attention to writing, linguists are quite the opposite. The majority of linguistics focuses on speech as opposed to writing because, after all, speaking came first, and speech determines writing, not the other way around. Writing is our way of recording speech, and that's why there's people out there who can't read or write but can still communicate via speech. If there's one thing you take away from this episode, it should be that, above all else, language is an extremely natural aspect of human nature and pays no mind to arrogant French academies that attempt to control it. Language is like water, filling the void of human experience as water fills the empty space of the container that it's in. It's used to make sense of the world around us. So, please, for the love of all that is holy, stop criticizing people for ending a sentence with a preposition or beginning a sentence with a conjunction. The fact that you know exactly what they mean should be enough to convince you that the way they are speaking is completely valid. And if someone tries to correct you, just passive-aggressively send them the link to this podcast. That way we can both help each other out. I can actually feel like I'm making a difference in the world, and you can get your annoying know-it-all friend to finally shut the hell up. But that's all I'm going to say about that today. Thanks for tuning in, and as always, be sure to tune in next time where we'll dive into one of my favorite sub-branches of linguistics, semantics, also known as the study of meaning. I'm looking forward to it. See you next time.